Session number 26588.
Alec Wingrave, Reel 4. So your training lasted for some 3 months?
Yes.
And then you were drafted to a submarine?
Yes.
Which one was that?
Well, my first one was Taku. She was a 1936 built. She was one of the early ones. Excellent boat, excellent captain. We had the most decorated submarine commander was our captain, George Hunt, and he was known as Hunt of the Altar. He sank so many craft in the Mediterranean that he had more decorations than anybody else, really. He didn't get the VC, which always choked him. He'd have liked to have gone to the Far East and qualified for a VC, but he didn't.
What was your job like on board? Could you explain?
Well, I did the cooking and the victualling with the coxswain. See, it was different in a submarine. You had so many other jobs to do that you used to help each other. And I'd help the coxswain with the victualling, and I'd decide the menus. One or two coxswains thought they'd like to do the menus, but I wouldn't have it. I used to cook according to the weather and the way the boat was moving about. You know, you notice that all submarines are boats, not ships. And I'd cook according to what was suitable for the weather. And every time in my nearly 10 years in boats, every time a meal was due, they got one. And of course, they were well pleased with that.
Were you the only cook or chef?
Yes, no, there was never a second one.
So you actually were involved in provisioning the boat?
Yeah.
Where was the food stored?
Oh, we had a store down below the control room. Most boats had them in the same place. And then we had a refrigeration, which was about a quarter of the size of this room, which was quite good. You could get 28 days food in there. For fresh food, like that, well, when I say fresh, beef, pork, sheep, lamb, whatever, and another section, a small section, for fish. And we could take that for 28 days, which everybody was well pleased with. But after 5 days at sea, we'd stock up with bread, white bread. Submarines had always white bread. And after 5 days, that would go green, some of it, and so the chef would have to be baking bread after 5 days, and I'd do £60, because there were 64 men on board. Pardon me. Usually there were, all T boats were 60 to 64 men, and the SS 54, but you bake bread every day, and I didn't mind that because I got one shilling. That's 10p for present money.
5p, I think.
5p, is it? I'm too old to remember, to know those prices. And we got, the submarine pay was good, of course. We got 2 and 6 submarine pay. 2 and 6 submarine pay. And if you was in a commissioned boat, you got another 1 and 6. And every night you slept aboard, you got another 1 and 9p. And for a clothing allowance, you got 1 and 9p as against 1 and 6 in small ships, surface craft. Because when we got in after long patrols, usually your pants and your singlet, you threw them over the side. Didn't bother to wash them. So you got threepence a day extra clothing allowance. So it came up quite a bit. And if anybody wants to work it out, I was getting 11 and 4p a day, total payment, and then my wife got her marriage allowance on top of that. So we were quite rich people at the time.
Going back to your job, can we talk a little bit more about that in detail? You're the only chef.
Yeah.
What would your daily routine be like?
Well, I'd do breakfast. We used to have a set breakfast every morning. So I'd cook breakfast. I'd be up about 6:30, And if I wasn't baking bread, then I'd leave notes on the electric switches, because all the galleys were electric in submarines. The old ones had oil fuel on the bridge, but they were all done away with after about a month after the war broke out. So they were all electric, and I'd do breakfast and then prepare lunch, and if it was roast, I'd do the lunch the previous day, beef or pork or something like that. I'd cook that the previous day so that I could carve it cold and it'd go further. I always made a thing of that. But if it was stew, it would be no bother. And then from seeing a chef in a sloop in Londonderry with stew in dishes, and he used to make what we call doughboys, dumplings, and he'd drop a dumpling all round the stew, and he'd call them boily bakes. So the under part was boiled and the top part was baked. It had a slight crust on it. And I was pleased I saw him doing that, because I used it all the time in submarines, and the boys were well pleased. And a lot of chefs didn't know about it, and the buzz used to go round that this was being done, why can't you do it? And so they were well pleased with that. And of course it filled them up as well, especially, well, from when I joined boats, really. In 45, we went to Canada and then Bermuda, and Lease Land had finished. So rationing was very, very tight. So it helped. You filled them up with whatever you could. And so they were pleased to have dumplings, you know, to fill up at lunchtime. You still bake bread, even in peacetime, you still bake bread, because it ran dry after 5 days if you were on a long run. But I didn't have to do a lot when we went to Canada. It took 11 days. It takes about 40 minutes now by head, doesn't it? In the flight, the super ones. But it took us 11 days to get to Canada, so I did have to bake bread then. But I didn't often after the war.
So you'd have to prepare all the meals?
Yes, but the sailors did their potatoes. I did everything except the potatoes. They used to peel the potatoes in each mess, and they'd put them up in their own various dishes or pots, depending what they were on. But I prepared everything else. If it was pies, I made the crusts and the doughboys the roast. I did Yorkshire sometimes with them. Of course, I did all that. And fed them to the best of my ability, in which they appreciated.
Who did the washing up?
The lads did in each mess. They did their own washing up. They all had a mess kettle. It was about that big. I think it held 4 gallon. And they used to... Each mess would wash up after each meal. And they had all their own equipment, of course, plates and knives and forks and what have you.
Did you cook separate meals for the wardroom and the captain?
No, they had exactly the same meals as we did. And it was a bit of a joke. When I was baking bread, I used to take the top off the dough and make rolls. So a young sub-lieutenant came along one day. Oh, he says, we're on rolls. I said, no, you're not on rolls. He said, what do you mean? We all live the same. I said, yeah, but I said, I get rum for those. And next thing I knew, down came a bottle of beer from the wardroom. And the skipper did a grin as I walked past. It was a bit of a joke, because it was quite illegal what I was doing. But I used to make rolls for everybody in the boat. And this was another extra sort of thing that they appreciated.
Were you ever restricted as to the water you could use in your cooking?
Yes. Oh, in my cooking, well, yes. If I had to wash cabbage and that, I'd do 2 or 3 washes from different pots and only use the same. And, of course, water was only switched on for an hour in the morning and an hour at night. And we wasn't allowed to bath or wash, only our teeth. And no, you couldn't do any dobing. You didn't do any washing of clothes. That was during the war, of course. And then we had, once or twice, we had what they called summer wars, which were big exercises with surface craft and aircraft. And that would be... then you'd have to be wartime routine, because we were so restricted with water, with fresh water. You could use salt water. You could have a bath in salt water, but you had to have a big towel and give yourself a good rub down afterwards. Otherwise, it was salty. It got a sort of crunch on it, on your skin. You could never get rid of it unless you had a good rub down with a good towel.
And what did you do with the waste?
In peacetime, it was ditched over the side. But in wartime, usually, once you'd fired a torpedo, all the waste went into the torpedo tube, and when it was safe, when you was in a safe position, it was blown out. Just the internal doors were shut, and then you open the external doors, and you blew it out. And of course, human waste had to be blown with a pressure of air, but you had to get permission to do that always. You couldn't blow waste. That's what we call it. You blow waste. You couldn't do that ad lib. You had to get permission from the officer to watch in the control room or on the bridge, depended what area we were in.
You said you had other tasks as well. I mean, were those routine tasks that you had to do, other jobs around the boat, or were you principally the chef and the only called upon in unusual
You were called upon to do things.
Circumstances.
Yeah, when operations were happening, you'd have a pipe, it would be piped for various people to do various jobs. See, my job was always number 5 tank. So I had to report the state of the tank with the equipment shut or closed. Shut or open, rather. There was one thing in the submarine, you were never allowed to use the word closed because it's too much like blows. So everything was either shut or open. And once or twice it happened when we were open to the public after the war, one gentleman came to me and he said, "Your English is not very good." I said, "Pardon?" He said, "Your English is not very good." He said, "Why shut and not closed?" I said, "Well, that's..." And I told him the answer. He said, "Oh, I see the point." And that was one thing that you always had to remember.
This is one of the diving tanks, I presume.
Yes. Or the magazine, we had a round cover for the magazine about that big, and all the 4-inch shells were down there, and Oerlikon equipment. And then the store. The store had a round brass top. And whenever they were open, you had to put these coloured printing out, shut or open, on both. One was in one section and one was in another.
So your diving station was on the tank?
Number 5, yeah, that was, I was always on. But that was the galley, so I could keep an eye on the galley and I'd be at my diving station as well.
What about your attack station or your action station?
Well, my action station, if it was a surface attack, I might be on the gun, on the 4-inch gun. And that was, I think it was number 7 on the gun, sight setter. Because you have to set the sights, depending, you get an order from the gun layer or the bridge as to what the sight setting should be. And you had to make sure you got that right. And then when you cleared the gun, the call came from the bridge, check, 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 and everybody would dive for the gun tower hatch. Two hatches you had on SNT boats. And I was always next to last down because the one behind me was the gun layer. And one boat I was on, we found a pair of Japanese jungle boots which had sponge soles about that thick. And because every time we left the gun, I used to come down in the control room with blood coming from my forehead where he used to jump on my head. Because once you're down, the boat is diving You see, when they check, they open the tanks and you're diving. So you've got to get down as quick as you can. And there was water coming in sometimes, and the gun lay would jump on me because I was the only one below him. And on the other side, the layer and the... What's the other one? The layer and the... One sets us. The sight setter. No, I was sight setter. The layer and the... One did the elevation and one did the other. Port and starboard. And he would go out through the other hatch. The two hatches. The layer would come one side and the... What the dickens was his title? Anyway, he'd go down the other hatch. So, and there'd be about... eight of us to get into those hatches and down. And of course the first ones down didn't bother, they used to go down the ladder, but we used to jump down the ladder and miss about three steps, you know, to get down quickly.
Did you have an action station when you dived?
Well, your action station was in the control room, and then the officer to watch in the control room might be the skipper before he went on the bridge. He'd shout the depths that we were coming up to. And when he got to 14 feet, he'd blow a whistle. And the gun layer would be up one side and open that hatch. And his trainer, that's it, the trainer and the gun layer, the trainer would open the other hatch. And sometimes water would pour in because we were a bit slow servicing. And then out they'd go. And we used to brag that we could usually get the first shell away after 24 seconds. That was our hope, that we could get a shell away after 24 seconds.
But you didn't have an action station when you were submerged?
Oh, we followed up. No, not when we were using torpedoes. Pardon me, no. That there was nothing you could do with torpedoes, you see. The TI, torpedo instructor, fired them, or they were fired from the control room, and so really there was very little they could do other than wait for the forward where the torpedoes were. They could be fired from there or in the control room.
What was your living accommodation like?
Well, because I was a senior leading hand, I always had a bunk, but there were so many bunks in the passageways and in the messes in T and S class submarines, but all the rest of the lads had to sling hammocks in the torpedo stowage space. But because I was a senior leading hand, I was always the senior in the mess. I always had a bunk, so I was fortunate.
How much space did you have?
Well, it was 7 foot long and 18 inches wide, I suppose. That's all. But that's another point that is relevant, really, in submarines. The cook, the signalman, and the gun layer, if they passed for petty officer, they were sent back to general surface ships. So they lost all their submarine pay. So there were so many of us. I was a leading hand for 12 years. Because I wouldn't go up. A number of captains sent for me and said, "Why aren't you a petty officer with all your recommends down through the years?" I said, "I can't afford to be, sir." "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, they didn't know, the officers seldom knew, that our three branches were the only three. All other branches could stay in submarines and go to chiefs, but not us. So that's why I was a leading hand for 12 years.
And as such, were you in the seaman's mess?
Yeah, I ate in the seaman's mess. And the tea boats, we had a seaman's mess in a tea boat. And I always had a top bunk there, so that if they were playing cards, that they could sit on the bottom bunk and I could turn in and be asleep.
How much space did you have above you when you were in your bunk?
Well, mostly in a tea boat. There was a fan shaft up there, and often I used to wake up in the morning with a hole in my head and blood blood running down where I used to hit my head on this fan shaft drain. But there was plenty of room as long as you didn't wake up with a start. If diving stations went, it was a klaxon, you usually hit your head because you leapt out very quickly.
How many people were in the mess?
26 for eating. 12 for sleeping. 26 for eating, 12 for sleeping, and the rest had to sling hammocks in the fore ends where the torpedoes were, in the torpedo storage department.
And would they eat in the mess as well?
Everybody would eat in the mess. You could sit down 26, surprisingly.
What other things took place in the mess?
Well, they'd play Ludo and cards and what have you, and write letters. That's all you could do in there, really. You made your bunks. They folded. They all folded. The bottom bunks folded once up, and the top bunk folded above that, or some boats. It depends where they were built. They'd fold downwards, but just out of the way. That's where we had an advantage of the Germans, because we had starboard gangways in all our boats, even the smallest, but the Germans always had centre gangways. So if they went to action stations and the dinner was on the table, it went up in the air, and they had to rush right through the boat. The wardroom as well. The wardroom was centre, was a centre gangway, and tip up tables. I don't know why they didn't follow our lead, because we always had starboard gangways, so you wasn't disturbed if you were eating or. And in harbour, you wasn't disturbed. When you were ashore, it bothered me. If you came offshore, it didn't make any difference.
You said that you couldn't wash when you were at sea.
No.
What was the smell like?
Everybody smelled the same, so it didn't matter much. No, everybody smelled the same. And you usually took one change of shift when you went out on patrol for some time, and the rest you stowed it away somewhere, and when you got in harbour or if there was a convenient time, you threw it away. But we didn't take any suits to sea with us unless we were in transit. If we were going to run from Canada or Gibraltar or the Mediterranean, then you took all your kit, but otherwise you left it in the depot ship or the base.
So what would you wear on a day-to-day basis?
Depending where you were, if you were going north, you had to wear everything you could lay your hands on, three or four jumpers, and usually you'd have to have an overcoat as well, even in a boat. And all the crew would have all the gear on they could. But when you went to Freetown, all you wore was a loincloth, and usually plimsolls or clip-clops. You know, the open-backed slippers. And except the stokers, they always had boots with no laces in, because they were on metal all the time. In the engine room was all metal decks, so they used boots with no laces.
So there were extremes of climate?
Oh, absolutely.
Temperature, rather.
Yeah, within the boat, yeah. Depended where you were. And sometimes, and there was one thing we always laughed about with people that reckon they were working on it, there was always water dripping down in the submarine, always. There isn't now, of course, they've solved it, but we always had water dripping down, and regardless of all the bulkheads and any, like, walls, you call them, would have, when they painted them, they splashed... It absorbs water. When a ship was painted, they were always green. It was always green because it was easy on the eyes. The interior of every submarine was green. And then as they were painted, cork was splashed onto it, just thrown on. And that prevented a certain amount of condensation. but not a lot. He was nearly always dripping with water in hot areas or any area where there was no proper ventilation, because the only time you got any ventilation was when the control room or the gun tower hatches were open and the diesels sucked the air in. That's how the diesels ran, from fresh air. And that was the only time you had any air coming through. And of course the stokers never got any aft, because the air was taken up by the engines, which were forward of the stokers' mess deck. And absolutely forward there was none, because they never got any. They never got air, because it was only sucked in through the engines.
And how often were you able to ventilate the sub?
Well, it depended on where you were. If you were in UK area, local, you could steam with the diesels running and the hatches open. But once you dived, of course, there was no more air coming in. So, because you were running on the batteries, and so there was no fresh air coming in, and that was it.
What was the discipline like on a submarine as compared to in general service on surface ships?
Virtually, there was no discipline. It was self-discipline. If you didn't do your job, you got a kick from your mate, and quickly resolved. There was no, I'll put you in captain's report and that sort of thing. You very seldom got that. It would have to be something very, very serious in a submarine. Everybody did his job, and he knew he had the job to do, and so he did it. So the discipline was discipline as having problems and being punished. It didn't happen. It had to be something. Usually, if it did happen, it was something that happened ashore, where somebody got drunk and got into a fight or something. But in the boat, it was self-discipline all the time.
I mean, did tempers ever fray when you were sometimes, for a long time, in such a confined space?
Yes, sometimes tempers did fray over silly little things, but they were quickly resolved, and the strong men of the mess would put a stop to it.
How long were you generally out on patrol for?
Well, the longest I did was 28 days, but the longest British sub was 56 days. That was a T-boat in the Pacific.
And what happened when you were out on patrol? I mean, in terms of getting news from shore?
You didn't get any. You didn't get any news from shore. There wasn't any. If a sparker might pick up somebody else's signal, you'd get that. My brother-in-law was lost on the HMS Charybdis, a cruiser, Dido-class cruiser, and the chief tell knew that he was on there, and he went and asked the captain if he could tell me we were at sea, and he'd picked up that she'd been sunk, and the captain gave him permission to tell me. So it's something very rare like that, that would, for babies being born, you never knew. They just didn't bother.